Daria Alara, and you're listening to Intimacies. Today is February 2nd. Welcome. How are you feeling? I'm feeling a little bit mellow, actually. It took me a while to get out of bed, where I had dreamed that I would wake up at 5:45 in the morning. I managed to get up and then turn off my alarm clock, grab my phone, get back into sea cucumber state in bed, and the ways to the morning away until 9 a.m. And as I mentioned last time, when that happens, I just have this automated response of being hard on myself and being disappointed with myself and just in the way that I've allowed the morning to take place or entirely not take place. Yeah, and it's something I talked about for a while last time, in terms of just being softer with yourself and allowing space for when you disappoint yourself and when you have a harder time facing the day and facing the things that you would like to get done. And so I guess as I'm sitting here, I'm sitting a bit with that tension of really valuing and working towards these attitudes, but still being in this internal state where a lot of the old patterns are still present and still kind of automated, and just sitting with that tension can be confusing. And so for anybody who is feeling similarly, I just hope that you take care of yourself throughout that confusion. And as always, something that helped me get out of bed this morning was promising myself a nice breakfast. And I realize I really like talking about breakfast because there's just something that can be so comforting and immediately delightful about these very concrete material sources of warmth and joy. And in my own life, I barely cook. I'm someone who in the last few years has always been sort of on the run, and especially being in New York, many days I wake up and I feel this pressure to just get out of the apartment and stay out all day, and the nature of going from class to class and thing to thing, it just gives this constant rush to my day and this reality of oftentimes being not home. And so in terms of my eating patterns, it's just, for the last few years, it's been quite unpredictable and unreliable, and always eating out. And on one hand, I've really treasured that because I found some shelters throughout the city and places that I consider as these kind of like temples of comfort for myself, especially a lot of diners throughout the city. Or something about the aesthetics of diners, and then the fact that you can sit around there for a long time and nobody seems to mind, and the people who work there are always very warm and generous, and the fact that the menus are always exactly the same, there's something very reassuring about that, about just the familiarity. And yeah, so on one hand, I really value that, and then on the other hand, I have felt a lot of shame about that in terms of, well, not knowing how to cook and not knowing how to buy groceries for one person, and when I do, accidentally letting things go to waste, and just sometimes going through this positive bout of, you know, getting groceries and cooking for a couple of days, but then I lose sight of that and fall back into not. And I guess something that I've really been privately proud about in the last couple of weeks is that I finally am finding more slow enjoyment in cooking and my attempts at cooking, where it has not at all been anything extraordinary or complex. It's involved a lot of eggs, pasta, but I think I'm finally looking at cooking a little differently and seeing it as more of as like an activity and as a site of slow enjoyment and, you know, just doing it for the sake of the practice and less even necessarily for the sake of what I'm making, but just this close contact with real colorful ingredients, where I recently have been really enjoying arugula because I'm an arugula monster and I can eat it all by itself, just bowls of it, and I find that it's probably the easiest thing for me to get in terms of actually ending up eating it and using it, because it's just so easy and you could just add a bunch of parmesan and olive oil and pepper and voila, it is absolutely delicious. And then I bought basil for the first time, and there's just been so much joy in using this greenery that I never really went for, because I saw it as like such a part of real cooking, and as I said, I do not cook in a real way. Where I feel kind of like a small child getting to know food for the first time, and just these small, beautiful ingredients, and kind of step by baby step, building a relationship with them. And so this morning, I woke up and I made myself some eggs and tomato sauce, basil, and bratwurst chicken sausage, and I got some pita and buttered the pita and added, what did I add? Oh, so one of the halves I added cheese, this Irish cheese, and to the other half I added raspberry jam, where I adore jam, and especially raspberry jam, where I am from Kazakhstan originally, and growing up there until I was 8, I ate a lot of raspberry jam, and I don't actually know if it's kind of a common experience. Well, actually, I think it is. Like, I feel that a lot of Soviet-adjacent people that I know also have this appreciation for raspberry jam. And so that was very helpful, where firstly, again, as I mentioned, I am a very moody creature and a creature very easily swayed by physical states. And so when I am hungry, things can just feel a lot more dreary and immediately solved by getting some warm food in my system. And then it also helps me slow down my morning and snap out of this thinking of that I have wasted it all away by lying around and that I'm now in this rush, because that is not at all the case. That's rarely the case. And just spending time in the kitchen with these, again, like concrete, simple ingredients, and listening to the radio, that was just really helpful in grounding me and my body and my actions. And I've been really liking listening to the radio as opposed to streaming services recently. And I think I've always had an appreciation for radio. And it reminds me of a younger time in my life, especially when I lived in London from 8 till 14, because I would spend a lot of time in cars. And in the car, there would most of the time be the radio playing, and I would always request Capital FM because it was just, I don't know why, I loved it. It was such a, I guess, a generic pop radio station, but something about its Britishness and its poppiness, I think back then I adored, and then now there's something I find very comforting, and so I find myself listening to BBC radio stations. This morning I was listening to their BBC World Service for a little bit, where that's more of a, I guess, kind of like an informational knowledge podcast. And truthfully, I'm not even sure what exactly they were talking about. I was a little distracted, but I think they were talking about non-alcoholic beers. And that's all I got from listening. I'm not sure what exactly they said about them, but if you're curious, then I'd suggest you check out BBC's World Service. And back to what I was saying about the radio, what I appreciate about it is that just this knowledge that it's something happening live, and especially with music, when I know there's somebody in a radio station or at home curating what is being played, I feel suddenly far more connected to the larger world. And especially in my room, especially when I'm having a hard time waking up, listening to a breakfast show, for example, it makes me feel like there are other people in my room encouraging me to get up. And one radio station I've been really liking also has been Foundation FM. And I discovered it through my favorite artist, Art School Girlfriend, who is just, oh my gosh, absolutely the most incredible music artist I've encountered so far, where she makes a lot of electronic music, but that can also be kind of described, I guess, as bedroom indie pop shoegaze. And I actually attended this event, first this online event, where she was doing a Tech Dissect workshop. It was through the organization Saffron, which, if you're in the music industry and you are a woman or queer, I would really recommend checking out Saffron, because it is, it's, how do I describe it? I guess it's an organization or a platform that specifically is trying to empower and create opportunities and provide educational resources and community for women and trans people and non-binary people. Since the music industry, it's a very male-dominated one, and I'm not at all in the music industry, but I came across it because of Art School Girlfriend, and I attended one of their events, and it was just one of the most fascinating things I've ever listened to, and it got me so excited about the creation of electronic music, where she walked through her process for some of her songs on the software Ableton. And I think if you have any kind of creative practice, it's always just so enriching to hear people within their own. And I am someone who adores any kind of interdisciplinary work, and in my own writing, for example, I feel far more inspired and influenced by things outside of literature than literature. And yeah, it also got me very dreamy about one day learning how to create electronic music. Though also watching this talk, it gave me a lot of perspective about how much work that is, and work that excites me, but also I understand that right now I should be focusing on my primary project, my novel, as that's kind of a I think, in some ways a strength of mine, but also perhaps a weakness or a curse, in that I can very easily get excited about things, and I'm fantastic at starting new hobbies, but then maintaining them or like focusing on one I can really struggle to do. And so, yeah, I think for now I will just let the excitement grow and attend events or pursue one-off opportunities, but I'm gonna try to, I guess, keep myself off of from diving heart in immediately and buying all the software, buying all the equipment and devoting my life to it, and then realizing soon after that this is not sustainable, because this happens to me often. But moving on, what I was talking about was Foundation FM, because Art School Girlfriend, she produces her own stuff, but then she also has a show on Foundation FM where she just plays a bunch of things that she has been collecting, and the genres range. They range from electronic to techno to jazz, alternative, lo-fi house, some new classical. But it's just so lovely. I am learning to listen to music, yeah, on the radio as opposed to a streaming site, because you experience this curated experience. Oh god, I said experience twice. Let's say this curated adventure that reflects another person's taste. And on Spotify, for example, I have this. Actually, I've had trouble with it recently, hence my escape to radio, where I can easily get stuck, and I can get stuck on specific playlists, on specific songs, and then I can really rely on mixes these days, those mixes that they create for you, which is convenient but also a bit of a bummer, because I feel like I used to put in a lot more care and investment into making my own playlists, and I could just spend hours doing that and curating a playlist for a particular mood, whereas now when I'm on Spotify, I just use those mixes as a crutch, and those mixes tend to be quite repetitive and lack range or new discoveries. So I've been feeling a little bit stuck and stale when I listen to my things on Spotify, and radio has turned out to be a fantastic solution. So I would really recommend checking out Foundation FM and learning whose shows you really like, and coming back for them, supporting them. But yeah, I guess, what do we want to talk about today? Last time we talked a bit about dating, as I guess I have on every episode. And unfortunately, since our last conversation, no romantic heroes have come about. And I guess that is the truth about me. That's what I'm always holding out for, some kind of romantic hero. And I keep going back and forth on this conviction that I am just going to abandon dating for a long while and become this impenetrable rock wall that kind of holds back from men, and that any advances online or in real life I will just shoo away and kind of maintain the status as a disciplined, chaste lady. And some days I feel that very strongly, especially when I go on a date and it doesn't go the way I hope. I have this very strong reaction of wanting to delete my profile, delete my account, never return. And then I find that I have a very quick recovery period. And that's something that on one hand I really treasure because I think it is kind of an integral part of my personality, or maybe evidence of a quality that I appreciate about myself in terms of ultimately being a hopeful person, an optimistic person, even though I can, of course, also really fall into rather nihilistic holes. I find that I can recover and find the light again pretty quickly. And yeah, I think that's what's really kept me within the dating game, whether I like it or not, since 18, where, again, I go through these periods of really, really feeling hurt and disappointed by it all, and just wanting to escape from the dating world forever. And then a few days later, a few weeks later, I can get just as hopeful and just as dreamy about things. And yeah, it's a bit of a complicated thing because I can also get quite frustrated with myself when I feel like, you know, I make this conviction and suddenly I go back on it, and then I go on another date, and then I return to that same feeling, and I kind of end up feeling like an undisciplined idiot who is ignoring my own intuitions and desires about needing a break. And then I also can feel rather guilty because sometimes, and this has happened very recently a couple of times, I go on a date and it doesn't go the way that I hope, and I feel that there isn't much romantic promise between us. And these days I like to be very direct and I like to be very upfront, and I have a really hard time maintaining dynamics unless I feel strongly about them. And so I make it clear that I think it's best we stop seeing each other, and I explain my feelings. And oftentimes the feeling is that, you know, I just have a hard time with dating in general and I would like to step away. And it's true in the moment, but then a few days later, a few weeks later, that feeling shifts and I feel like such a liar, and I suddenly feel like I lacked the courage to be even more upfront and kind of specify that it's not how I feel about dating as a whole, but that our specific dynamic, just I don't feel what I'd like to feel. And I feel guilty about that and feel as though I intentionally lied. But in truth, I also know that it's not a matter of lying, it's just a matter of my feelings having changed. And yeah, it's something I can definitely run around in circles about in my own head. Kind of the relationship between my shifting emotions and morality or truthfulness. Yeah, or I guess if a friend was telling me this, I would definitely argue for the side of that it's absolutely okay for one's feelings to be changing, and if anything, it signifies a more in-contact relationship with oneself when you're able to recognize and acknowledge and sit with each feeling and feel it fully and let it change to the next one. Yeah, but also as a friend, I would understand those feelings of guilt too. Yeah, I guess this whole friend exercise, it's something that I do somewhat, where I guess maybe it's one of the skills that I learned over the years in terms of adjusting my frame point in terms of thinking or how I'm talking to myself. As with many of us, we oftentimes have a much easier time saying compassionate things or showing compassion to our friends over ourselves. Yeah, so that's something that can help me, though it also somewhat only goes so far, where it in some ways it's easier said than received, because you can tell yourself these things, but sometimes it's still hard to hear it and let it really sit and shift the feeling and like completely shake off the guilt or reassure you. Yeah, I guess I'm just voicing that to make space for all the dimensions. But back to dating, I guess I was just saying that, as always, there have been no romantic heroes, and up until a few episodes ago, you hadn't heard from me for a long, long time. And the last time that I've been here, well, you know what, that doesn't really matter, let's be in the present. What I would rather talk about is that there was a romantic hero back in October, and I think I mentioned him briefly a couple of episodes ago, and he's definitely been someone that I've been wanting to talk about, because it was the first person that I got really excited about romantically in a few years, and the first time since my last relationship, which was 3 years ago, where I felt like, oh my gosh, I really think this is blooming into a relationship, something that I'd been holding out for so long. And then it ended up falling apart so quickly, where we had met in October, beginning of October, and it had fallen apart by that last weekend of October, and it was one of the more painful conclusions that I've had to a romantic encounter, though actually I think they have I think with the people that I attached myself to very quickly or intensely, those conclusions have always been likely equally as painful. But this dynamic, it's something that I felt in the moment, and I feel very much right now, that it was an incredibly karmic encounter, and that this beginning and ending and the intensity of it was all ushered in by a higher power into my own life, and I guess as a way to again reflect what's working for me romantically and what's not, and to encourage me to let go of certain things. And I'd say that's actually been the case for every sharp or dreamy romantic encounter that I've had. But I think these days I'm just far more aware of it in the moment. And as I've mentioned, I think the last couple of episodes briefly, I've really been quite focused on spiritual frame points in the last year and a half, and it's a bit of a fraught relationship for me in terms of my relationship with God, because it's on and off, and I have not developed a practice, and I also am someone who can be very avoidant, and I can feel very close to God for a couple of days, and then something about the closeness suddenly feels scary and I run away, or I just allow other parts of my life to take precedence. And yeah, I think, and right now I'm going through this period likely since actually the end of this romantic encounter. So since the beginning of November, I have felt quite disconnected from God, and in some ways less so than in the past, because I'd say that God is still very much on my mind, and I feel the fact that I feel disconnected, whereas in the past, I just, there wasn't really this explicit thread between me and spiritual dimensions. Whereas now I feel the fact that I'm being avoidant, and I find myself showing up in small ways where I had made an offering of cherries and flowers the other day, and even just talking about it here, where I think God and spirituality, it especially these days, permeates everything for me, whether on a unconscious level or not. But for example, in October, and kind of all of the fall, I had more of a blooming practice that was emerging in terms of me going to this spiritual community group that I'd mentioned in one episode, where we would discuss the Bhagavad Gita, and it's this center, this Hindu center in East Village called the Bhakti Center, I think. And they have a temple, they have different yoga classes, they have community groups, they host a lot of festivals, celebrations there, and it's just a really lovely site for community and for connection. But it's also a place you can go to learn more about God through a Hindu bhakti lens. And so I was doing that in the fall, and I would have these weekly classes, and that was just really great in terms of having me actually show up to a concrete space every week and really sit with my feelings about God. And since that ended, I haven't had that, and I have not developed a personal practice, and so I have just felt sort of unmoored. And then also the dissolution of that romantic dynamic. I remember that what had really helped me when the feelings felt really intense was reaching out to God, and I spent that weekend intensely sobbing and spending a lot of time at home and singing, actually, where that was something new for me as a personal practice, because, you know, I've gone to a couple of kirtans at the Bhakti Center, which I might have mentioned before, and it's pretty much just like one of the ways one can worship, especially in a community setting where everybody sings mantras together and even dances. And there's something just very joyful about that kind of worship, and I feel like whether you believe in God or not, it's a kind of practice that just helps you connect with yourself in a room and your body through these acts of singing and dancing, these things that are so integral to the human experience and our need for movement and sound and beauty. And so I've experienced it like that a couple of times, but I really have not found a way to pray in a consistent manner, nor to worship in other ways. But that weekend, in my distress, I finally reached out in a very like on my knees, heart open kind of way, I'd say, and that the ending of this romantic endeavor was terribly painful, and it just felt like I was kind of at a certain rock bottom, and I feel like for all of us, somehow it's far easier to meet with God in those kinds of places internally rather than when we're doing fabulously. And so I ended up singing a lot of different songs in my room and making offerings and just finding solace in a spiritual connection. But what ended up happening was that that weekend I felt intensely connected. And I think, firstly, something about the intensity of that felt scary. And secondly, the fact that that connection was coming from a deep sense of pain, it made this connection for me between God and pain in a way that ever since, when I think of God and when I think of engaging in some kind of practice, I just feel scared and put off because I'm reminded of the feelings that I'd felt that weekend. Which is, of course, a misinterpretation because God and my practice was not the source of the pain. It was actually the only clear lifeline throughout that pain. But it made that kind of imprint. And something that was emphasized actually in my community group was the fact that each person's relationship with God, an entry point into devotion, it's a very personal and unique thing, and it's also a timeline that cannot be imposed or at all rushed. And for some people it can come very quickly and very intensely, but for a lot of people it actually is something that you really ought to be patient with and kind of listen to what you need throughout, and also, I guess, recognize this with every relationship, that you need time for both sides to build something. And I think maybe that's part of what I've been feeling too, and that weekend it felt very intense, and I felt like, again, I was on my knees, heart open, chanting and singing and praying the distress away, and then it was just too much too fast. And so I think since then, I just feel very nervous about the idea of stepping back in and getting consumed by it. But I have technically signed up for a second community group that I think starts this week. And I say it technically because clearly I have a sense of nervousness and dread about returning to that space. But I think I will encourage myself to be brave, and I will just show up and see how it feels. Where I don't know if this is at all compelling for people, and I understand that, I guess, divulging my romantic intimacies is probably a lot more accessible and juicy for people to listen to. But I guess, God has just been really on my mind in the last year and a half, and I think also the ways in which I look towards God, that very much comes from my disappointments and pains in the romantic realm. So those two feel really intertwined for me. And again, this morning I woke up and I was feeling kind of mellow. And partially it might also be to do with the moon, where this whole weekend I've been feeling a bit, definitely quite introspective and very sensitive. Not in a way where I feel easily upset by things, but just in a way where I'm walking through the street or I'm sitting on the train and everything around me feels really loud and obvious, especially in terms of its emotional energy. And according to the Vedic moon calendar, the moon has been in Pisces, so that might be an effect of that, as it's a watery sign, and watery signs can be pretty sensitive positions for the moon. And my own moon in my natal chart is in Cancer, which is, for better and for worse, a very sensitive position that tends to be quite moody and very easily influenced by the position of the moon. I don't think I've talked much about astrology here, but I definitely put a lot of faith in that, though particularly in the Vedic system, which is rather different to kind of the contemporary trendy astrology that a lot of us know astrology by. And I feel very much like a baby beginner when it comes to well, all sorts of things that are spiritual, but especially Vedic astrology, where the more you learn about it, the more you realize it is an insanely complex system with such history and detail to it, and there are things that feel almost mathematical to it, or definitely very scientific. And those are definitely the parts that my brain struggles with more, is I'm not organically drawn to the more mathematical and scientific parts of life. But one key difference is that it follows a different calendar, where I think it's maybe like a difference of half a month, maybe even more, where basically, well, in Western astrology, for example, from between like maybe around like 20th of July till August 20th, that would be Leo season. In Vedic, it would actually come later, would be from around August 15th till September 15th. And so if you have never looked into Vedic astrology, I would encourage you to, as your signs within that system likely would be different than within the Western astrology system. And I know some astrologers like to use both and see merit in both. I, for now, strictly like to look towards the Vedic system. But yeah, as always, we have really jumped around today, from breakfast to radio to disappointments in dating, seemingly a necessary part of every episode, to God and astrology. But I was talking about my last romantic hero this past October, and I guess I've been wanting to do an episode where I sort of just talk about the things that I really liked about him and kind of float that into the ether and grieve it. And at this point, it was a little while ago. It's February and this happened in October, but from anyone who listens to this likely have easily seen that I am someone who can get attached to people for a long time and have a hard time letting go. And so this space was actually one of the primary intentions when I was starting off, was to give myself space to grieve and let go when I was in my relationship that was really difficult to let go of. But this boy, also I love to refer to men as boys, where I think that's just something to keep in mind, that no matter how old they are, there seems to be a part of me that loves to say boy instead of man. And a lot of them, in some ways, are still boys. So this boy, he was very lovely. He was, in many ways, oh god, I just knocked the stand. I hope it wasn't too loud, but let's give him a name. I'm gonna call him the Forest Prince. The Forest Prince, he was 26. We had met off of Hinge, and our first date, we met in the park and we went for a long walk, and then we ended up sitting down in the grass and we ended up having one of the steamiest first date makeouts I'd ever had. And I ended up having a nosebleed, and while I was straddling him and making out with him, out of the blue, I open my eyes and I realize that I am having a nosebleed and bleeding directly onto his face. which, on one hand, was terribly mortifying. On the other hand, it also meant that it was game over for me right from the beginning, because that is probably one of the most absurd and romantic things that could happen on a first date. So that, paired with the fact that I adored the way that he kissed me, or the way that he would kiss me, was pretty ridiculously consuming, and it just made me feel like I like I was a very docile creature whose only job in this encounter is to be devoured. And maybe in some ways this is problematic language to describe and enjoy within a dynamic with a man, but yeah, it was just so yummy. And I guess I just have a really big thing for daddies and people who embody the energy of a daddy in different ways. And although this boy was a very young man, only 26, and I think anyone, if the age difference is below 10 years, I barely see it as an age difference, even though I've also learned some difficult lessons about the fact that age is not always just a number, and there are realities to consider when trying to date people older than you or younger than you. But alas, let's return to the Forest Prince. Yes, he was very much a daddy, especially in the way that he kissed me. It was so delicious, and it made me feel like I just wanted to be devoured and to have him do whatever the heck he wants to do with me. I was ready for that. And it was only our first date, but that was the magic of his kissing. And also I think the magic of the park and the magic of the nosebleed, where there were just a lot of these small elements to our encounter that felt just kind of oddly romantic and fateful, where we had also, both of us had spent our summers in Hawaii working on farms, and he was also in graduate school, and we kind of had similar eyes, where his were also very hazel, sometimes green, sometimes brown, and yeah, there was a lot to be accidentally seduced by. And then on the other hand, there was also something very grounded and comforting about our dynamic from the start, and that just being around him and being around his body just felt really good. And I feel like whenever we talk about our physical connection with someone, oftentimes that's immediately interpreted as like the lust you have for someone and your sexual chemistry. But I think what I tend to mean is actually far more beyond that, and I really treasure a physical closeness with someone that is just this deep comfort and pleasure in literally just sitting by them and being near them and touching in ways that, yes, of course, feel sensual but not necessarily sexual. And for whatever reason, we had a very strong physical connection, and it was the kind of encounter that gave me further perspective on how important that is for me. It also gave me perspective on how much of a liability it can be, or how distracting it can be for me, and that it can easily, immediately convince me that someone is right for me when a lot of the other puzzle pieces are missing. And now, with hindsight, as always, I can see the other puzzle pieces that were missing, and I can see that actually part of the reason why we fell into such a steamy makeout on our first date was because Well, because conversationally there wasn't as much freedom and engagement and limitlessness as I don't know if as I would need, but maybe as I would hope to have with someone, where, yeah, there would be standstills to our conversations that I at the time took more as like organic quiet. And I think some of those pauses were, but again, now with the perspective of time, I see that that also the way we thought about things and engaged with each other, and especially in terms of our emotional worlds and how we expressed those emotional worlds or did not, there was an incompatibility that that meant that we didn't always have as much to say, and that meant that there was more room for miscommunication and assumption. And we ended up going on eight dates that all happened very fast, and we ended up sleeping together on the second date, even though I promised myself I would not, but then I was just, my gosh, so terribly seduced by this forest prince, and the whole affair had a very dreamy quality to it. And I think one of the most difficult things about it ending was that the dynamic had just really shifted towards the end, in a way that actually I haven't really experienced before. And I remember bringing this to my therapist and her just affirming how actually this happens often, that the way in which someone comes into a romantic dynamic, that won't always be sustained, and oftentimes people can actually begin to act very differently and a different side of them comes out. And that was partially what had happened, and I'm talking kind of in vague terms right now because I understand if I get into the specifics I could talk for another billion years, but I think it is actually towards the end of our episode, and so I do want to keep talking about Forest Prince and his daddy kisses and dissolution of all my romantic dreams between us in a very short, intense period. But perhaps that is something to look forward to for next time. Yeah, and I guess all of that I say maybe as a way to further sit with the fact that today I feel a little bit mellow, and that as always, any feelings of mellowness for me are oftentimes quite tied to feeling like there is no romantic hero on his way on the horizon. And usually that is actually just evidence that there is some kind of lack of connection with myself, and that I need to tend to something inside myself that I haven't been tending to. So I guess that is the work today, and one thing that got me out of bed today was realizing that I really want to run away to the forest, and so I got a ticket to the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, so I think I need to be around some trees today, where I also had rewatched Princess Mononoke the other night, and that is and by far my favorite movie. I could watch it every night and never grow tired of it. And Prince Ashitaka is also my number one male fantasy. And I really hope that the romantic hero that eventually comes into my life embodies a lot of the qualities that Prince Ashitaka does. I also hope that he embodies many of the qualities that River Phoenix does. I've been watching some of his interviews, and yeah, he was a very dreamy baby. But what I was saying was that today I'm going to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens by myself to make contact with the natural world and forget about romantic heroes and remind myself that all I need is inside myself and all I need is with the trees, blah, blah, blah. Things that my therapist would be proud of. Yeah. As always, I was gonna actually do something else and then I lost track of direction and I took us in new places, but maybe that is also the value of our time together. It's the sense of adventure and mystery and lawlessness. So it sounds like we have good things to look forward to next time. Next time I plan to read a poem that I've been planning to read every time and then I never get to because it's a long poem. And I also do want to read a bit from the Bhagavad Gita because it's a text that I've been really struggling with and it's a text that I find a lot more issues with, I'd say, than spiritual bliss or solace in. And I thought that maybe a good way to dip my toes back into spiritual practice is to engage with things on here and give myself the room to show up, but to also voice all the ways in which it's hard to show up and the things that I take issue with. Yeah, so next time I think we'll be doing some of that. And as always, thank you so very much from all of my heart for anybody who's been listening, for anybody who popped in and out. Where I would be nothing without you. I would just be a disembodied voice floating in the ether, rambling on about about loneliness and horniness and godlessness. So anyone who's there and is receiving this, you are making it real and you are making it valuable. Yeah, so thank you, and I hope that you eat something delicious today. I hope that you also make contact with some trees, and I will talk to you very soon.